Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show is brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdys have served this valley for decades. Auto, home, life, business, you name it, they have it. They have specialists that can take care of you. They'll find you the right insurance that fits your needs. And also find you the best price. If there's a claim, they go to work for you right away to make everything right and ease your mind. It is Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our play-by-play call of the day, the Florida legend, Mick Hubert, the Gators at the wire with a Hail Mary.
So now here we are, 9 seconds left. Gators first down, 37-yard line, left hash. Snap to Franks. Franks dropping back, stepping up, running the ball, looking. He's going to heave one deep down the field. It's going to be to the goal line. It's going to be gone! It's a touchdown! And the Gators have won the game! Tyree Cleveland! Oh, my! I can't believe what I just saw! The Gators have won the ball game on a bomb thrown by Felipe Franks! And this place is an insane asylum again! Oh, my! Ball game! Gators have beaten Tennessee again!
That a beautiful call or what? Mick Hubert with the call on the Florida Gators Radio Network. What a finish. And by the way, Brad Nessler's TV call was also a slice of broadcast brilliance. Both of them were. And we're working to get Brad on the show, right?
We are.
Yeah. Love to hear from him again. You're not going to find a better guy to talk to, be around on or off the air than Brad Nessler. But Mick, great call. Awesome call. Better than great. That was an awesome call that he made on Saturday on the game winner. Matt Leon now joins us from KYW in Philadelphia. Matt, welcome. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Hello there.
Well, they go on the road, play Kansas City. What'd you think of the overall performance?
Uneven. I thought there were positives to take out of it. Thought there were also alarming mistakes and some weaknesses were exposed. But all in all, I thought it was a solid showing in a very difficult venue against a team that is sneaky good, that may finally be ready to step up from that pretty good realm up into an elite realm.
Now, I want to ask you about Kansas City, because I felt, and I think I said this to you last week when we were doing the show, I felt that something that was seemingly lost at times in the win they had over the Patriots is that there was so much talk about the Patriots that not enough people talked about Kansas City. Now you've had really two good looks at them. What do you think of them?
I think they're very impressive. Alex Smith is playing as well as I've ever seen Alex Smith play. And you really kind of look all around on offense, and they've got weapons everywhere. Kareem Hunt has really played well as a rookie. I think now 5 touchdowns in 2 games. Travis Kelce is a difference maker at tight end. He's probably half a step below Gronkowski. But if they were to funnel the ball to him, he's just hard to stop. And what you see with the Chiefs now doing with him is not only are they utilizing him as a traditional tight end, but he scored a touchdown yesterday on a shovel pass, which you don't see with the tight end very often. I think at least once against New England, they ran him out of the backfield on kind of a jet sweep type look. Obviously, Tyreek Hill, who was quiet yesterday, Eagles did a pretty good job of keeping him in check, but he can change games on one play. So they've got weapons all over. They've got a quarterback that doesn't make mistakes and can get the ball where it needs to be. And on defense, their pass rush is good. The Berry injury at safety is going to hurt them a lot in the long haul. I mean, you know, I think you'll start to see some teams start to take advantage. And the Eagles had success throwing the football for the most part yesterday. But they can do a lot of things. If they can tighten up a little bit in the secondary, and it doesn't have to be great, it just has to be pretty good, they're going to be a force in the AFC.
All right. Back to the Eagles now. They're in the division where yesterday Dallas was beaten rather soundly by Denver. Washington did bounce back and beat the Rams. We just talked about the Eagles. The Giants will play tonight. And the best the Giants can do is make it a four-way tie after 2 weeks. That's the best they can do out of it. So what kind of advantage do you think anybody has in this division, because nobody at the moment appears to have the feel to take the division?
Yeah, I think it's wide open right now. I think kind of the wild card here is I'm interested to see if Odell Beckham is able to go tonight.
Right.
What that does to the Giants, because they were terrible against Dallas. I mean, they were so non-threatening on offense. They had nobody that could make any kind of a play. So I'll be interested if they get Beckham back tonight, or whenever they get Beckham back, if that transforms things, because all of a sudden with a guy like him on the field, the offense makes a lot more sense. Washington didn't impress me last week. I saw parts of their game against the Rams, didn't really impress me in that one. I don't think St. Louis is very good. They did have some success running the ball, which is unusual for the Redskins, but they strangely enough, struggled throwing the ball, and they had a hard time stopping Todd Gurley. I don't know what to make of Dallas yet. I think that's a difficult place to go into yesterday in Denver, and take it for what it is, but there was that, what was it, an hour delay?
Yes.
Late in the first quarter. And that, you know, right or wrongly, that can kind of throw teams out of whack when you're standing around like that, because it just gets you out of rhythm. I don't think they were winning the game anyway. But, I think of, obviously there's still some things to be determined with Ezekiel Elliott as far as what's in the courtrooms now and the off the field issues, which are disturbing. But as far as on the field, as long as he's on there and they've got him and they've got Prescott, who, you know, plays a good game at quarterback, and obviously Dez Bryant and Jason Witten, who obviously doesn't age, along with that top flight offensive line, they're going to be able to do things offensively. I think their defense is mediocre at best. They've lost some guys to some suspensions and stuff like that. I don't think their defense is anything to write home about. You're going to be able to score points against them. So I guess the bottom line is, I think this division is wide open. I think the Eagles have as best a chance. I might put the Eagles right behind Dallas as far as the top two teams, with the caveat of what we see from the Giants tonight, because obviously things can change week to week. But I think the Eagles are better than the Redskins, as they saw week one, and I think right now they're better than the Giants.
Yeah, I mean, the Giants offensively showed nothing in the opening.
No, I mean, nothing. Yeah, I mean, Brandon Marshall looked old. He was non-existent.
Yes.
Now, you get Beckham on the other side, and all of a sudden Marshall becomes maybe a sure-handed release, or, you know, underneath release valve and stuff like that.
I actually think it makes Shepard better more than Marshall.
Yeah. And I think the guy to watch on that Giants offense is their tight end, Evan Engram.
Yes.
I think he's athletic, first-round pick. He could end up being the number two option behind a healthy Odell Beckham. But, tough for a tight end to break in as a rookie right away and make a huge impact. But I think as the season goes on, he's a name to watch as far as a guy who could help make that offense make more sense. But the thing that makes no sense to me about the Giants, they haven't had a running back in like a decade, and they seem to do nothing ever to address it.
That's right. And I agree with that.
It seems like every year they end up with a guy like Paul Perkins, and Shane Vereen, I think, has been there since Jimmy Carter was in office. I mean, it's just amazing how they don't address the running back situation, or how it just doesn't work out.
Injury-wise, a lot of teams have suffered very tough injuries in the first 2 weeks of the season. You know, we can sit back and analyze whether it's a lack of preseason work or not. Who knows? How are the Eagles physically at this point through 2 weeks? Are they in better shape than some teams? Are they in tough shape that people don't realize?
The problem with them is I don't think they've had anything more or less than any other team, but all their injuries have been concentrated in one area. We saw the cornerback Ronald Darby get hurt week one with the ankle injury, which looked like it was a season ender, you know, from the moment you saw it. They haven't said that, and you're starting to hear things thrown around like week to week, 4 to 6 weeks. So they might have really dodged the bullet if that comes to pass, that he's only out for a month or so. And then yesterday they lost a couple of guys in the secondary, Rodney McLeod, the safety, Jalen Watkins, a nickel dime back. Neither injury is significant. But if they both can't go against the Giants and you combine that with Darby being out still, all of a sudden you become razor thin in the secondary, and that could create problems if, for instance, a healthy Odell Beckham is ready to go. So they haven't been, you know, I would say probably middle of the road as far as injuries are concerned. The problem is they've all kind of funneled into the same column.
Jason Lucanfora on CBS Sports wrote a very interesting column today about NFL quarterbacks, and these are the first half stat lines of NFL quarterbacks yesterday, and he did all the research on it. Blake Bortles of Jacksonville, 5 of 12, 41 yards and interception. Jacoby Brissett, Indianapolis, 7 of 15, 73 yards. Kirk Cousins, 9 of 15, 81 yards. Jay Cutler, 13 of 17, 75 yards. Mike Lennon, 13 of 16, 116 yards, 2 interceptions. Brian Hoyer of the Niners, 8 of 14, 47 yards, 1 interception. Case Keenum of the Vikings, 6 of 13, 53 yards. DeShone Kizer, 6 of 11, 81 yards, 1 interception. Marcus Mariota, 9 of 18, 80 yards, 1 interception. Carson Palmer, 11 of 21, 162, 1 interception. Tyrod Taylor, 5 of 7 for 15 yards. Those quarterbacks, 11 combined, 92 of 159, 761 yards, 4.79 yards per attempt, no touchdowns, 7 interceptions. When you hear those numbers from all those starting quarterbacks in the first half of games, what's the first thing you think of?
I think of going out and buying the NFL ticket. I don't know about you, because I want to be able to jump around from all these games.
I cannot blame you.
Quarterback play, the NFL, in my opinion, has gone a slow decline over the years as far as the quality of the product. And I think one of the reasons why the product is not what it was is because of the struggle at the quarterback position. I mean, you throw out those names, and, you know, we're week two. Those are a lot of those quarterbacks are the types of names you'd expect to hear week 15 when teams are out of it.
Yes.
These are a lot of these guys are kind of the best a team can do. I know in some of the situations, like Kizer, you know, he's a rookie trying to start, but, you know, a lot of those guys have been around the bend or on their second, third, fourth team, and there is just a lack of quality quarterbacks to take over jobs. And it's tough to watch. I mean, and a lot of those numbers aren't because, you know, they run run-first offenses where the passing game is a second option. You know, you can count on one hand the number of teams that really consider themselves run-first attacks.
Right.
You know, everybody's based on the passing attack, and, you know, maybe as things get more intricate, as you know, the coaching and the offensive play calling goes to a different level, and you've got guys that are only in a system for a few weeks and are called on to start, it is a tough transition. You know, there's probably a lot of things we can put into this. We can go back to the college game. How many colleges run spread offense where the whole offense is, you know, we'll just put our athletes against your athletes in space. We're faster, bigger, stronger than you are, and my guy can throw a spiral, so he'll get it to you. And I'm not, you know, ripping any of this. You know, you're doing what works at that level. But you kind of put that together. You put that together with the concussion situation. You put that together with free agency. You put that together with coaches moving around so much that offensive systems change. And you kind of mix all that up with some other thing, and it kind of gives you this toxic stew of mediocre to bad quarterback play. And it just happens that that's the most important position in the game.
Are we finding either coordinators or head coaches being too careful? You know, the turnover is such a big deal. Are they playing the game too carefully out of that position, not taking chances?
It's possible, but you've also got to guess. A lot of times they're doing that because they see the guy in practice every day and they know what he's capable of, and they don't want to put too much on his plate.
Right.
I think it's... It's just a different game than it was even 10, 15 years ago. And, you know, poor quarterback play is really the trigger. I can't tell how many games do you look up and you're halfway through the third quarter and it's 6-3. and it's not great defense. It's not a game like that. Eagles Chiefs game yesterday was 6-3, but you watch that game, the defense has played at a high level until the offense has figured some things out halfway through the third quarter. But that happens all over the place in the NFL, and it just makes it tough to watch. And it, you know, the NFL ratings have been going down. I'd be fascinated to see what the ratings of the NFL would be in a parallel universe where there was no fantasy football, and see how many people were watching it for the love of the game or the sport or enjoyment of the sport, and not for how their running back's doing. You know, I think it would be interesting.
It's interesting because I did spend a segment talking about fantasy football and the positive impact it's having on keeping people interested, especially millennials.
Oh, no question. Who's watching Tennessee Jacksonville on a Thursday night in November, except, you know, somebody that's got Marcus Mariota on their fantasy team?
Right, exactly. Always a pleasure, sir. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks a lot. Talk to you next time.
That's Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia. Ben Jones, final half hour. We'll come back. We'll talk about Joe Thomas and Zeke Elliott on opposite sides of the NFL spectrum yesterday in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Even when they grow up, your kids can still surprise you. My son calls to tell me he bought his first new car, picked the make, model, and dealer all by himself, and negotiated his own deal. But when it came to insuring his new ride, he wanted Dad's advice. I told him one word, Selective. They've always done right by me. It's nice to know you're still needed.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at purdyinsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
All right. Let's talk for a moment about professionalism. And that would deal with two moments yesterday. Let's talk about the unprofessional first, and that is Zeke Elliott. Zeke Elliott yesterday, there was a pass that went through Dez Bryant's hands, and Chris Harris at Denver picked it off. And Elliott's right there, and instead of chasing him, just stops at the 50-yard line, puts his hands on his hips, and then just watches and then turns away. That's not how you play the game. I don't care. He had a day where he had 9 carries, 8 yards, so what? Something I've always talked about Elliott is what a hard worker I always thought he was. I talked about his ability to block. I've talked about him as a receiver. I've talked about him as a running back. And I think I've said nothing really but glowing things about him since day one. I mean, whether he was at Ohio State or the pros. Not this time. You know, you're having a bad day. So what? Right? Don Beebe was having a bad day against the Cowboys in the Super Bowl, and he chased down Leon Lett and forced a fumble that went out of the end zone. It had nothing to do with the outcome of the game, except he had too much pride to let somebody score on him. Elliott stopped at the 50 and just put his hands on his hips and looked back. He quit. Then let's go to the other side. Joe Thomas. Yesterday in the middle of the Ravens game, Joe Thomas, and here's a guy that you can say with no uncertain terms, will be an absolute first ballot Hall of Famer. The Cleveland Browns left tackle went out yesterday against the Ravens in a moment that was not recognized by anybody and played in his 10,000th consecutive snap in the NFL. That streak now is at 10,062. This is a guy that, according to Peter King on MMQB, Peter wrote that Thomas has now played through 2 LCL tears, 3 MCL strains, 2 high ankle sprains. He said he told Peter he's able to hobble through the LCL back in 2012. He said, if it wasn't the last game, I might have missed some time, but I guess it was the last game of the season. Almost got pulled out at the end of a game, but now he's at 10,062 consecutive snaps. It is remarkable in such a physical game that he's been able to do that. And he has been on a team that is 4-35 since Thanksgiving 2014. and he takes every snap. Meanwhile, Elliott's had nothing but success his entire college and pro life, and then one game goes south and he stands in the middle of the field with his hands on his hips watching a guy run back an interception and making no effort himself to get involved in the play and help his team out. Yesterday, the Rams drew 56,612. The Chargers drew 25,381. Combined in Los Angeles, they drew 81,993. Again, 81,993 between the two. USC and Texas Saturday night in the Coliseum drew 84,714. Remember what I said earlier about the NFL going from being so sure of itself to guessing? The Chargers situation shows that once again they made another bad guess. Final half hour of the show, Ben Jones, statecollege.com. Talk about Penn State's win and where they are through the first quarter of the season. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. The only way it should be is with a new Ford truck from SMC.
Four city blocks of new Fords. Over 40,000 new trucks sold. There's only one place you want to be in September for your new Ford. It's Sunbury Motors Ford. During the annual September new truck sale, choose from over 100 new Ford trucks with F-150s starting as low as $23,994. Pick from 55 new 2017 Ford Escapes priced from just $19,380. SMC has over 275 new Fords with savings up to $13,500. And every new Ford is clearly marked with an orange sale sign, meaning the lowest prices of the year. Plus, there's 0% financing for up to 72 months on many models. SMC is where you want to be for the annual September truck sale at Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza
and at sunburymotors.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business insurance, you name it, they have it. They have the best agents that take the best care of you. They want to find you the right insurance that fits your needs and also make sure that it fits your budget. And if there's a claim, they're your partner. They go to work for you right away. It's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Time now for the sports bozo of the day. And it goes back to what I was talking about earlier, Zeke Elliott. Got to be a pro out there. They pick the ball off. Don't let them run away from you. Get involved in the play. Don't stand with your hands on your hips. Can't do that. You just can't be a great pro when everything's going your way. You've got to be a great pro, especially when things aren't going your way. You want to be a leader, you got to be a leader all the time. There you go. Okay. Remember a couple weeks ago I was talking about we put so many, there's so many stories out there and everybody talks and they talk and they talk and they talk and they talk and you'll spend 3 days in something and then I'll tell you, so you know what? This isn't a story. It's not a story of great importance. And I was talking about the Yankees and the Red Sox, the Apple Watch thing. Remember that? I said, they're going to find the Red Sox. I said, they're going to dock up a draft pick and move on. Simple as that. Well, it came out Friday. Guess what they did to the Red Sox? they fined them, did not dock them a draft pick, and they fined the Yankees, too. Now, the good news is the fine money all went to hurricane relief. They always take, that's what they do with all the fine money all the time. X has been fined $10,000. They always donate it to a charity. In this case, the Yankees and Red Sox fine money was donated to hurricane relief. But is it worth mentioning that the incident happened that's being investigated? Absolutely. Is it something to go overboard about for 2-3 days? Absolutely not. You have to judge as to what's a real story and what's not. And that wasn't it. He said, you know, just not a big story to me. And to the credit of Rob Manfred, instead of, all right, everybody dig in, let's let this linger forever, he did it and got rid of it. That's rock solid leadership right there. He dealt with it, got rid of it, and now he's moved on. It's no longer discussed even as a potential issue. All right. Let's bring in Ben Jones, statecollege.com. Ben, welcome. Great to have you with us. Penn State is at the quarter pole of the regular season. What did you see in the first three games?
I think you more or less see the team that you thought you were going to get out of Penn State this year. I mean, they can score points. There's no doubt about that. Even when they're not on their best, they can score points. The defense is bend but don't break, but has some things they've got to figure out a little bit. The offensive line is better than it has been, but it's got some things to figure out. I think, you know, Penn State's in a good place right now. I think ultimately, and what matters the most, is that Penn State is probably the most well-rounded Big Ten team right now, or at least with the smallest question marks that they've got to answer moving forward. So I think ultimately, you know, that fact alone and this offense alone is going to keep Penn State in every game that it's in. And because of that, they'll maybe be able to figure out some of these issues that they've got over the next few weeks. But certainly going to Iowa is going to be a challenge.
Yeah, no question. You know, what would top your list? Give me three different things you think they need to be better at.
Well, I think they've got to be able to run the ball in a much more, you know, they're blocking for holes. I think, you know, Saquon, obviously what he's able to do to get around guys makes up for a lot of facts. But I think that, you know, you look at his runs on the average carries, on the non-highlight reel carries, and he's not getting a lot of yardage. I think that's a big thing. I think maybe they got to shore up the defensive tackle area. It seems like some teams have been able to kind of go right up the middle on him. But a little bit of that has to do with the dink and dunk that the teams have been running against Penn State. And I think Tyler Davis, for as consistent as he has been in his entire career, he's kind of had these, you know, few kicks that you feel like he's going to make that he's missed. Certainly, you know, he's made far more than he's missed, and every kicker is going to miss some over the course of your career. But, you know, Big Ten play says often is decided by field goals, that you want to make sure that that guy, you know, is headed into conference play with as much confidence and consistency as you can get.
Yeah, you're heading into games now where you need every score. I mean, and so I see exactly what your point is about that. What about the Big Ten overall as a whole? Have you been able to get a gauge as to what you think everybody looks like through three games?
I think the funny thing for, you know, as much as we talk about how good the Big Ten East is, I think if you look at what Purdue is doing this year, if you look at how Wisconsin's playing in Iowa, obviously Penn State's not going to be able to avoid that this week. But I think the Big Ten West has actually looked maybe a little bit better than people often give it credit for. Minnesota, even with PJ Fleck, you know, they're 3-0. And I think you look at Ohio State and Michigan, and these are obviously, you know, Ohio State's probably better than people give them credit for, even though they're ranked so high and still have some of their issues that they've got to figure out. But they look beatable. Michigan, you know, their red zone offense has struggled, and they're 3-0 because of that defense. But I think, you know, they're ripe for the picking on any day that, you know, the team they're playing is playing their best football. So I think, you know, you look at those teams, they're beatable. You look at the Big Ten West, it's going to be far more entertaining than maybe it has been over the past few years. And you got Maryland. Maryland's putting up a bajillion points a game. Certainly, you know, not against the stiffest competition, but they're 2-0, and they've put up a ton of points. So I think it looks like a very, you know, balanced Big Ten this year, where you've got the good teams on the top, but some of the guys that have been towards the bottom of the conference, I think, are having stronger years, which kind of makes some of these games that used to be formalities. If nothing else, you know, like Purdue, Michigan this weekend is one that I'm looking forward to watching. And, you know, that certainly hasn't been the case over the past few years.
To be honest with you, I'm really happy about the Purdue thing for them. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, I'm thrilled for their fans. I mean, he's come in. They're actually exciting to watch on offense. They gave Louisville all they could handle. And that win at Missouri was very, very impressive what they did, I thought.
Yeah, no, it was. I mean, I think you always have to feel for fans like that. You know, we both spend a lot of time around Penn State basketball and know, you know, the number of people that have had season tickets for, you know, X number of years, a really long time, and have been waiting and waiting for it to kind of, you know, figure itself out, and it's getting closer and closer. And you look at Purdue. I even thought Purdue last year, you know, at times looked maybe like a better team than they were sort of performing in terms of the final score. They just had some issues they had to figure out. And it seems like this team has got it figured out. And like you said, you know, what they did against Louisville, you know, they deserve to win that game as much as, you know, Louisville did, and that's certainly not something that you would have thought going into the year.
Yeah, no question about that. Also, when the play of seniors like Grant Haley, Marcus Allen, I know at one point Brent Pride made a comment, I go into a room now, I see 8-9 seniors in a room. Just the value now of reminding everyone how valuable seniors can be.
Oh, well, I mean, it's great, especially on a team like this, because these are guys who aren't going to make mistakes, and they're not going to get beat in coverage. And I think, you know, when you've got a team like Penn State that's trying to do the sorts of things that Penn State is trying to do this year, you know, the having guys like that, especially on defense, an area where, you know, it really can decide so many games in the Big Ten, to have guys like Grant Haley and Marcus Allen out there, it's just huge. And I think, you know, they're sort of, you know, it seems like Grant Haley has been playing, you know, corner for Penn State for 100 years at this point. And really, you know, for him to get that interception, to get the two interceptions, to play how he's playing, you know, it's nice to see, because he's a guy that certainly he's had a long career of a lot of great plays and big things like that, but he deserves to have this sort of season after everything he's been through, you know, to kind of see Penn State, you know, try and go out on top and have guys with that kind of experience and confidence. You know, that's the difference between, you know, good teams and bad teams, and good teams and elite teams. And right now Penn State's got veteran guys in all the right places with a good mix of youth, you know, to kind of learn the ropes of some of the best guys in the Big Ten.
What is your initial read of Iowa?
Well, I think, you know, Iowa, we were joking the other day in the press box that Iowa, you can kind of watch an Iowa play and then guess which of the past four decades that play came from, because there's so much. A team that doesn't change very much. I mean, they can run the ball well. They're big in the trenches and on both sides. They've got some injuries. I think they're still sort of, everyone's kind of waiting to see what's going to happen there. But, you know, Iowa's Iowa, and I think ultimately, you know, that's been to Iowa's detriment and to Iowa's advantage over the years. So I think you're going to see a team, certainly, you know, at that night, at that home, plenty of Penn State seasons have sort of hit a few potholes along the way at Iowa, so you always have to take that game serious. You know, Wadley is as good as any in the Big Ten. Butler's played well behind him, and they've got receivers. You know, Nick Kiesley's a guy with 16 receptions, 2 touchdowns. You know, they've got guys everywhere on the field that can beat you. I think the only thing is that Iowa, you always kind of know what you're going to get out of Iowa, and because of that, you know, there's not maybe going to be very many surprises, and it just comes down to execution. And I think to a certain extent, that makes us the perfect opponent for Penn State, because they know what they're going to get. They know it's going to be a physical game, and they know that there's not going to be tons of surprises. So it comes down to execution and physicality. And I think, you know, if Penn State wants to prove that it's as good as everyone thinks it can be, you know, Iowa's the perfect test to go out and play a team that you know exactly what you've got to do to beat them. You just have to go out and do it.
Right. Penguins and Sabres tomorrow night. You're going to be there?
Yes, sir. Wouldn't miss it. Should be a lot of fun. I won't wear any Flyers gear, but, you know, I think anytime, you know, you can see, I'm not sure who's going to make the trip for the Penguins, but I think anytime you get to see, you know, a bunch of professionals play at a high level, even in the preseason, it's a great opportunity to watch the game of hockey.
Yeah, and it does, you know, as you said, you were not sure who's going to make the trip. But rest assured, some of the stars will make the trip. I mean, they're not going to be totally devoid of stars when they play out there.
Yeah, and the Penguins in particular are such a deep, you know, franchise right now, and all the youth guys that they've got coming in, that certainly, you know, you're going to see a few people on the ice tomorrow night that you saw a few months ago when they were raising the cup.
I also think there's a good chance you'll see Jack Eichel tomorrow night for Buffalo, too, as another young star. That'll be fun. I think it's just fun to get into Pagola, and you get to see the defending Stanley Cup champions. That's not a bad deal, Ben.
Yeah, no, it's not a bad deal at all. And like you said, Eichel being out there last year, when they played this game, he was just coming back from Worlds. And he was really sort of like the marquee guy for that whole matchup. So to have him out there, you know, if he comes, and having, you know, any of the handful of Penguins guys, just having everybody in State College, and as much as it pains me to admit, you know, State College is a Penguins town, So it'll be a good little break before the weekend when everybody gets all their blood pressure up before the Iowa game and whatnot. I think that was the great thing about last week's game, really, for a lot of fans, is sort of like one last chance to take a deep breath and have fun before every game becomes, you know, pins and needles each week.
I put no stock in, you know, but it's in preseason, whatever. I'm not talking about the Penguins now. I'm talking about Penn State hockey, you know, polls or whatever. But they are of interest. It's not like they are not of interest. And I saw that they had Penn State fourth, and the only two that made the watch list were Peyton Jones and Dennis Smirnoff. Were you surprised by that?
Yeah, I mean, those watch list things are always a little odd, you know, from the standpoint of how the sort of politicking that goes on behind the scenes with all of them. But certainly, I mean, Penn State's got, you know, Andrew Sturt's not being on the preseason list. That's a guy, you know, who's been as a reliable goal scorer as any in the Big Ten. You know, Penn State, I think it's just tradition at this point that Penn State gets to pick fourth, you know, in terms of what they think they're going to finish. But I think, you know, Peyton Jones, there's an argument to be made that he's the best or the second best goaltender in the league right now. And I think, you know, if he plays as well or half as well as he did in the Big Ten tournament, Penn State's going to have a chance to win every game it plays. Certainly, it's going to be a little bit of a bumpier road in the start because their schedule is a little harder than it has been in the years past. But without a doubt, Penn State's got a lot of talent, and sort of that tradition of overlooking them a little bit early on continues. But certainly, you know, Minnesota and Notre Dame in particular are two teams that are going to be tough to beat. It's going to be a lot of fun. It'll be interesting to see how many Big Ten teams can make the postseason in the next few years, considering that it's a bit of a bloodbath in that conference right now with how deep it is. But certainly, you know, that's a team that's garnered a lot of interest over the years, and it's not going to change at all coming into this season.
Always a pleasure, Ben. Thanks a lot for your time. Very much.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Penn State-Indiana game, by the way, the next one at Beaver Stadium will be a 3:30 kick. It's going to be on BTN, so as you make your planning, Penn State, Indiana, a 3:30 kick in Beaver Stadium. That will take place on September 30th. And at one point in that game, Jack Hamm is going to be honored. No one deserves it more than he does. Now, I've always told people, I've said it many times, and I mean this very much, I was always told by my parents, always work with somebody who can make you better. And whatever you think of my particular performance, he doesn't just make me better every season or every game. He makes me better every play. And he just is a really great person to work with and to be around. So he is going to be honored at the Penn State-Indiana game, which is going to be really neat. It's going to be really, really neat. It's being done in conjunction with the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And that's just part of that weekend. Now, between now and then, Penn State and Iowa. That is going to be Saturday, Kinnick Stadium, 7:30, night game. It looks like Butler, the grad transfer running back out of Nevada, is out of the game with an elbow injury of some sort. Akram Wadley did not come back to the game the other day, but it sounds like they expect him to play. I think he's a really talented player. Really talented player. He's the one real speed guy they've got out there. They got Vandenberg back, a wide receiver. Good, solid possession guy. Runs really good routes. I think Nate Stanley, the quarterback's better than I thought he was going to be. I'm impressed. You watch him play, he's accurate, got good footwork. Big kid, too. He's like 6'5", 235. Good offensive line, good defensive line. Parker Hesse on the outside is really good. Defensive ends, about three linebackers are all good. Neiman, Josie Jewell, Bo Bauer, all really good players. They play a little deeper at linebacker. When I mean deeper, they play about a step further back the most linebacking units. It's almost like they want to see something and then they can react to it and feel like they have the time to do it without losing pursuit or leverage on it. But they play a little bit deeper as a linebacking unit than most you see. Secondary's good. Not dominant, good. Kicking game is, you know, the punter is good. Place kicker's really good. And the atmosphere will be second to none. I mean, it'll be a night game there. And which means it'll be electric now. It won't be quite nighttime when the game starts there. It's going to be a 6:30 start there, but 7:30 here. But somewhere, probably by the end of the first quarter, somewhere in the middle of the second quarter, and then the lights will really take over there. And by the way, if you're going to the game, if you are going to Iowa City for the game, and you'd like to take another step further in your Penn State experience, the women's soccer team is playing Iowa out there Friday night at 7 o'clock local time, 8 o'clock Eastern. Just an add-on for any of you who are going out to the game. So the women's soccer team, which won yesterday in double overtime over Illinois, and they've now won three of their last four, and all three of them have been shutouts. Last two being Northwestern and Illinois. But they will play Friday night in Iowa City. So if you happen to be one of those who are happen to be going to the game, you want to take another step in your Penn State experience, taking the women's soccer team out there on Friday night. Better that I mention it than not, then it's your option as to what you want to do with it. But at least you know they're playing there. Fun show today. Our thanks today to Joe Susan on his birthday joining us as Bucknell gets ready for their Saturday showdown with Sacred Heart at 6 at Christie. Our thanks to Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia. Great talk with him about the Philadelphia Eagles. And our thanks to Ben Jones of StateCollege.com. Talking Penn State football. Tomorrow, Neil Kulong about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Wednesday, Tony Knopp, CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, on the business of sports. Great to have you with us as always. Appreciate all of you more than ever.
We're your home for news, sports, weather, and your home for the Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.